Listen to every New England Revolution game online. Download the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. This is The Soccer Show with your host, DJ Bean.
98.5 The Sports Hub. Happy Saturday morning. This is The Soccer Show. My name is David Bean. Call me DJ. That is Jeff Lemieux. You can call him Jeff. Every friend I have named Jeff has like a, I don't know if you actually have this or I just like projected on you, but every friend I have named Jeff really, really loves that their name is Jeff, and they don't want to be Jeff Lemieux. They don't want to be Jeff Israel. They don't want to be nothing. All they want is Jeff.
You know, I've never necessarily felt that before. I feel like maybe there is sort of a community of Jeffs, and now I need to be part of that and kind of bring that energy.
I do have a quick bone to pick with you off the top, though. I didn't think you not being a watch Lasso in real time thing would be an issue, but after this week, I'm like, you know what? Nate's being a real pain in the butt. I'd love to vent on it, but all the soccer people I know either don't watch Ted Lasso or they do the smart thing, which is wait until the end of the season.
For whatever reason, I watched the first season after the whole season was out and binged it in one weekend. Loved it, but I can't explain why. For some reason, I just haven't gotten back to it. I haven't watched the second season, haven't watched the third season, and I don't know. There's just nothing right now compelling bringing me back to the show. I really should. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody in the soccer world, this is all anybody ever talks about, and I'm left out of all of those conversations. But I don't know. I'm a very busy man who's not actually busy, and I just can't find time for Ted Lasso.
All I talk about with my friends is like the degrees to which we stan Hannah Waddingham, who plays Rebecca. She's like the ultimate boss, a legend. You must have actual interesting conversations with your friends. Instead of watching Ted Lasso, maybe you're watching replays of disallowed own goals, and that would separate you from some of these soccer officials, because I don't know what they're watching, bud. The Revs going into this game against Montreal this weekend, which should be a layup. We'll talk about that in a second. What's layup in soccer? Is it like tap-in?
Yeah, tap-in, I guess, would be your equivalent.
Could be a tap-in in for the Revs against Montreal, because Montreal kind of stinks. But they're coming off a frustrating 1-1 draw against NYCFC, and I had both the screens going on Saturday during this game because I forget what basketball game. Oh, UConn was probably playing. And I was really, really more kind of paying attention to the Revs because I was intrigued by the fact that they weren't smoking NYCFC. And then, wouldn't you know it, they break through thanks to an own goal by NYCFC. The goal is then disallowed as I'm doing my stupid all caps tweets about how the Revs are going to win the MLS Cup and Supporters Shield and everything. They call back the goal because Gustavo Bo is apparently, quote-unquote, in the line of vision of the NYCFC goalkeeper. I was confused by it, and typically when things like that happen in soccer, I let the soccer people do the talking, because if I just say I'm confused, people will be like, yeah, you're always confused. You're dope. You're confused about everything. But friends who were watching the game were like, that's a really bad call. What's going on here? And then our friend, Bruce Arena, really let the officials have it in the post game. Was still going on Tuesday when we talked to him. What did you think of that disaster?
So this is what I'll say. I've had conversations with friends in the refereeing community since then, and this seems like one of those instances which we find across sports, it seems, from time to time, where the law of the game, the rule as it's written, doesn't leave a whole lot of room for, you know, subjective interpretation from the referee. And I have a close refereeing friend who's saying the way that the rule is written, it's technically the correct call because Gustavo Bo is objectively in the line of sight of the keeper. Now, people who have actually played the game and understand the game will look at that play and say that there's no way that Gustavo Bo, being where he is and the way this plays out because it comes off the defender and because it is an own goal and the way the keeper reacts, there's no way that Gustavo Bo actually affects the goalkeeper being able to make that save. So it should be a goal. It should be in the spirit of the game. That goal should count. Everybody wants plays like that to count as goals. I think that was kind of Pro's messaging to Bruce Arena, was like, hey, we do agree with you that, like, in the spirit of the game, there's no reason for this goal to be chucked off. It should count as a goal. But I'm also getting some messaging from friends that are saying the way the rule's written, it's the correct call. So it's one of those cases where it's like the law is just written poorly. Like it's just a bad It's just a bad rule, other than this was a misapplication of the rule.
And I remember I'm a hockey guy, and I used to talk about this with Jack Edwards, who's obviously a big hockey guy, but also a huge soccer guy. And he would say one advantage that soccer has on hockey is how much weight they give to the spirit of the game and the spirit of the rule. And something like in hockey, you know, they'll call back a goal because 35 seconds before it, a guy tried to stay onside but was just barely off and everything. It's like, well, if he was trying to stay onside and was just barely off and didn't really affect the play in that moment, then within the spirit of the rule, that should all be kosher. And typically, my soccer watching experience is, yeah, they could get ticky-tacky here, but we were all watching. We all know what all the guys were doing. Like, that's fine. So this was a head-turning call, especially because it involved a goal, which are not in abundance in the beautiful game.
Yeah, we used to be, I think, a bit more like that. We're now, with the technology coming into the game, moving a bit more away from that.
Technology famously does not have spirit.
Especially in the Premier League, where we're seeing every single weekend now offside calls using technology, where players are literally a toenail offside sometimes, and it's wiping what very much appear to be good goals off the board. So you're losing a little bit of that spirit of the game that used to be quite a bit a part of those calls. At the same time, too, I'm like, I understand feeling aggrieved by the call and talking about it for a couple of days afterwards, but it feels like, I'm like, let's move on, right? Like, it's not the first bad call in the history of sports. There were people who after the game were like, well, if Pro admitted that this call was wrong, where are our points? Like, are they going to give us our points back? What happens now? Do they change the standings? And I'm like, no, like, are we acting like this is the first bad call that's ever been made in the history of sports? Like, it happens, and you moan about it for a couple days, and then you move on, right?
There have been a couple of instances, even going back to Sunday's NCAA championship, where you're like, do people watch sports? Because, like, there also was that, like, you are right in the case of this, because Pro, the professional refereeing organization that basically, like, oversees U.S. and Canada, right? That's correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
They came out and they were like, yeah, bad call. But that happens in the NBA. The NBA has the last two-minute report, and, like, no one goes to jail or anything. But, like, with the basketball thing on Sunday, it was like, so, like, what do we do about these players that were being so disrespectful to each other? And it's like, We all watched Aqib Talib for like a million years, right? Like,
what's the thing? People were like, well, what's the Revs' recourse here? Yeah. Like, their recourse is to complain about it for a couple days and then move on.
Yes.
That's what the recourse is.
To be a little hot under the collar and complain a bit. But I did find it kind of interesting. Bruce Arena, sorry, I call him Bruce, his friend, says that anybody who watches soccer, is involved with soccer, understands that shouldn't be called back. But then he threw in like maybe people who write about it disagree.
Yeah.
I was like, damn, kind of a stray.
Yeah, Bruce is always going to find a way to take a little bit of a shot at the media whenever he can.
I love it, though, because even when Bruce is happy, I remember like Tommy Giles and I used to, when we'd come down and do interviews with him, he'd be like, gentlemen, good to see you. I'm looking forward to you telling me why, like, everything the Patriots are doing is wrong, even though they've won four games in a row or something. And I was like, if you're serious, I will do that. I actually do have a
few. Sounds a lot like you.
I do have a few quick thoughts that I think that you'd find really, really interesting. Going into last week, I was saying, tell me why I shouldn't be worried about NYCFC. In this case, tell me why maybe I should be worried about Montreal, because Montreal stinks. They've conceded the most goals in the East. They've scored the fewest goals in the East. They did have the one surprising comeback win over Philadelphia, but by and large, this team stinks, baby.
But even Montreal's only win this season, that 3-2 win over Philadelphia, the three goals that they scored, which are the only three goals they've scored this year, one was an early penalty. The other two were against 10 men, because Philadelphia had been reduced to 10 men by that point. So this is a Montreal team that, yes, five games into this season have struggled mightily. It is, I will say, a Montreal team that when they were fully healthy last year and before they were hit by a rash of injuries before they transferred a few of their key players out to European leagues. They finished second in the Eastern Conference last year. Mm-hmm. This Montreal team won 20 games last year. There is still very much some talented pieces on this Montreal team. But beyond that, these are just the games that always terrify me. And I don't know if I got
MLS,
hurt, if I got hurt by a game like this at some point in my childhood and I can't shake it. But yes, this is a game. If you want to be a contender in this league, which the Revs certainly want to be and have shown signs that they can be early in this season, at home against a team that hasn't scored a goal away from home yet, yes, this is a game you should absolutely be winning, picking up 3 points, moving on to next weekend in your road trip to Columbus. But that's just not the way it works. So these games against teams that are leaking goals,
yeah,
cannot score goals themselves, have been atrocious away from home. These games terrify me, and there's no logical explanation for it. They just do.
They've scored goals in only one game?
Yes.
That's amazing to
they've
me.
They've played four road games, and they have not. They've all been shutout losses.
Well, I mean, the Revs have really stacked the clean sheets, so hopefully that continues. I did want to quickly congratulate you on Newcastle moving up the EPA table a little bit.
Yeah, it's a big week for Newcastle. They looked like they were struggling there for a little bit mid-season, thought they were going to drop out of the Champions League places, but they've turned it around.
Hey.
Four straight wins, huge win over Manchester United last weekend to leap them in the table, then a big 5-1 win over West Ham. So things looking up for Newcastle. Hopefully they can see things out through the last 10 games and find themselves in the Champions League next year.
I'll probably bring this up with the great Charlie Davies when we talk to the CBS Sports Golasso star. But how do you like the new U.S. men's national team? Or I guess just the new kits?
Yeah, so they've got two kits unveiled.
Yep.
Two for the women's national team. The road kit the women's national team and the men are both going to wear.
Yeah,
they were unveiled.
I don't know why I was outrageously accidentally sexist there.
Yeah. But these are going to be worn by the women's national team in the World Cup. And, you know, in terms of the designs themselves, they're fine. I find them, you know, inoffensive, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of like the blue away kit. It's an okay design. I'm a little thrown off by the fact that the blues seem to be different to me. They say they're not. They say they're both loyal blue is the color. They seem different to me on both kits. But where this really gets me is, like, to me, I'm okay with a little bit of meaning behind a kit. Like, give me some sort of meaning behind a couple elements in the kit, something that means something to the club or the fans. But when you get into these descriptions, like U.S. Soccer's description of this kit, saying that the jerseys were heavily influenced and built by the players. The players' insights were combined with Nike designers' inspiration from abstract expressionism, an international art movement that started in the 1940s in New York and shifted the art epicenter from Europe to the U.S., similar to what the U.S. team has done for women's soccer. You lost me. You've gone too deep into the explanation. Just give me a kit. Say, we thought this looked cool. Here's a couple elements that mean something to some people. How do you guys like them?
If they were truly built by the players, wouldn't the jerseys like try to blackmail the coach or something like that?
I mean, if you want to stay true to form, right?
That sounds more like the players. I do like the blue one. However, actually, the blue one has really grown on me. My issue is, and this shows what a soccer guy I am, once they add the World Cup crest or shield or whatever, the gold thing, right? That's probably going to be in the middle.
Yep.
Isn't that going to look so much like an Italy jersey?
It does look a bit like an Italy jersey, and plus with the U.S. logo right next to that logo, it does get a little bit convoluted. Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't hate it. All right. Thank you very much, Jeff. Always excellent to talk to you, and hopefully see you at the Revs game this Saturday. Up next on the 98.5 The Sports Hub Soccer Show, we got the great Charlie Davies.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Soccer Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub, home of the New England Revolution.
98.5 The Sports Hub back here on The Soccer Show. Joining us, as he does every week, is former Revs, U.S. men's national team star, now broadcasting legend. You'll get to see that rise continue on Tuesday, I believe, when CBS Sports Golasso kicks off. It's the great Charlie Davies. Charlie, what is happening, my friend?
I'm just excited. I'm living a dream. I coach my boys' first spring soccer game tomorrow morning, so I'm excited about that. And then just there's a lot of games this weekend. Revs, obviously, taking out Montreal. I expect a big win. And then Tuesday, the build-up to Tuesday, which is the launch of Morning Footy on the Golasso Network, I could not be more excited.
Weeks ago, Charlie, not long ago, I was picking your brain about a guy by the name of Graham Potter saying, man, are they really second-guessing all this stuff over in Chelsea already with this guy? And are we really wondering this quickly if he's a fit with this team? Because they bring him in, they've given this great roster, and now it feels like immediately they're asking a lot of questions that I would think you wouldn't ask right away. And wouldn't you know it, he has been, I was going to say fired, but this is a soccer show. Charlie, he's been sacked.
Yes, he's been absolutely sacked. And you know what probably hurts the most is that they had their coach in Thomas Tuchel already, and now Thomas Tuchel yes. is taking over Bayern Munich. So it's one of those things where you're reading through the press that they're reaching out to former coaches, Carlo Ancelotti and Jose Mourinho. So two managers have won with them previously who have both been sacked. And how ironic is that? And especially when you look at Manchester City, who's playing Bayern Munich in the Champions League final. If Tuchel is over to take over Bayern and then to win the Champions League, oh, that would hurt. That would hurt the Chelsea baseball, I can tell you that.
Yeah, I was going to ask how this affects the Champions League, because as Morning Footy is starting Tuesday, that's also a lot of the games over there are resuming.
Yes, and I mean, we couldn't be more excited to cover Inter Benfica on Tuesday with Manchester City Bayern Munich being the highlight match of that day. And then the following day, there's two big matches. I mean, the Serie A battle between AC Milan and Napoli. AC Milan just absolutely spanked Napoli. And so you feel like AC Milan has got that confidence going. Rafael Leao is playing like a world-class winger, attacker that he is. And then Real Madrid, Chelsea. People were thinking Real Madrid has fallen off. They're going to lose La Liga to Barcelona. But after their last Clásico in the Copa del Rey against Bayern, where Karim Benzema had a hat trick and Vinicius Jr. just were running circles around the Barca players, you may feel a different way now about Real Madrid. And Chelsea, you could hire whoever, and I still think they're going to be flat. Although Lampard is in a great situation, that's a win-win for him, because he can turn around and the expectations are going back to the things that he knew very well with Chelsea. Probably going to go back to the 4-3-3 and leave the three-back system. And it, who knows? If they shock Real Madrid and go through, he's at the very least going to earn a new job in the Premier League next season with another club.
I do want to go back to Chelsea, because Graham Potter was only there for, 7 months? They hired him in late September, and he, I think, was considered the guy who can get a team to overachieve maybe the way that what he was able to get out of guys in Brighton. Did it really go so poorly that they needed to pull the plug so quickly? And what actually went wrong there?
Yes. When you manage a club like Chelsea, there are expectations and the demand and the pressure and the intensity is ultra high. And they bought a lot of players. They invested in the squad. And when you spend that much money, sure, they're going to give you time, because it's a bunch of young new players and a lot of players who don't have a long history of success. Most of them had a World Cup performance. Enzo Fernandez is a perfect case. He's made two major moves in just over a year. I mean, going to Benfica, going to the World Cup, and then another massive move to Chelsea. So the pressure when your name is attached to a certain transfer fee, you got to deliver, and it's got to be smooth. And for the Chelsea supporters, you get Mudryk for $100 million. You got Enzo Fernandez, along with Sterling, Havertz, Mason Mount, who hasn't seen any playing time as of late because of all of these transfers, you're just thinking, okay, what are we going to see? When are we going to start to see an energetic, fun, dynamic team? And it just hasn't happened under Potter. And so you keep giving them month after month, and there'd be disappointing result after disappointing result. They just weren't entertaining enough in the attacking third with all of that talent. Joao Felix, it seems like he gets in all the right places, but he lacks the finished product. But we all know it's going to come eventually. It just hasn't clicked for him yet. And ultimately, him not being able to score and finish cost Potter his job. It was that the 2-0 loss to Aston Villa is what really did it, because you're giving time and time, and then when you get shut out, you lose to Aston Villa, where they were in the table. Enough was enough, and I think they lost patience, and they said, we got to move on from here.
What ends up now I'm down a Chelsea rabbit hole mentally, so I apologize. What's going on with Lukaku?
Yes. There's a number of things with Lukaku. I think, one, at the World Cup, it takes a lot out of you. One, he wasn't going into it fit, but the expectations for him were to get fit during the World Cup so that he could lead Belgium into the knockout rounds and they could get back to competing for a World Cup. And he just wasn't sharp. He wasn't fit enough, and he missed too many chances. They crash out. So now you're really low mentally, physically, trying to build yourself back to get into a run of form with Inter. And while he's at Inter, and I think it's taken him a while, but he's looked sharp as of late until we get to this big match against Juve in the Cup, and Coppa Italia is a big one. Juve had been deducted 15 points because of the cheating scandal, and I think Allegri has done a good job to build them back up, and now they're on the verge of still qualifying for Champions League. They're not that far out. So it's another big match this weekend. But Inter have kind of fizzled out. And Inzaghi now is on the hot seat. I think they're about to sack him at the end of the season. I don't see him managing Inter next season. So a lot relies on it. A lot of Inter's success relies on Lukaku to get hot and score goals. So in this Coppa Italia match, he's getting chances. He's not confirmed. Lukaku we saw in the World Cup, and then they get bailed out with a late penalty. He scores that penalty, which obviously is massive. It's a high pressure situation. He comes through, and then the racist chants come out from the Juventus supporters. And unfortunately, this is something that has happened and occurred often in Italy. And so he erupts. It's with a celebration. Then, obviously, a fight ensues after. There's a scuffle. There's a dust-up. And he's sent off with a red card, two yellow cards. And, unfortunately, he's fighting the fight for all people of color who suffer racism, who suffer racial abuse. And he puts it on himself to kind of be this figurehead of combating that and seeing UEFA take actions and seeing Serie A take actions. And he just doesn't feel that strong enough. So when you have all that pressure along with performing, it can really set you back and cause you to not be at your best. And I think with all that pressure mounted on Lukaku's shoulders, sometimes it gets the best of him.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like yesterday that they went out and it was almost like a New York Yankees thing where Chelsea was like, yeah, like we had this guy, we went away and he grew into something great. Let's throw a boatload of money at him. And now all sorts of chaos has ensued. What's Lionel Messi's situation? Do you think that he could go back to Barcelona? Is MLS a possibility?
MLS is certainly a possibility. So they, Inter Miami, have made their offer to Lionel Messi and have given him a part of the ownership group. Have given him a stake in the ownership group, which is a very attractive offer on top of being in the United States and a place that he calls home. He vacations in Miami in the off season, very comfortable. The only issue with Inter Miami is that they're not good.
Right.
They're not competitive enough for Lionel Messi. Barcelona is interesting, but I just don't think they have enough room to to accompany a contract like his, considering that they're they need to shed $200 million to be able to compete next year in La Liga because of financial fair play. So they have to get rid of their whole roster, basically, to have a Lionel Messi, to be able to afford a Lionel Messi. So I don't see that happening. There is no contract offer from Lionel Messi. Actually, there hasn't even been a firm, concrete conversation around Lionel Messi joining Barcelona. So I think right now he wants to play one more season in Europe as it stands, one more season of Champions League before coming to potentially MLS with Inter Miami. So right now, I think Inter Miami are confident. We're just not sure of when Lionel Messi could come to MLS. If it is 1 year from now, next summer, or one summer from now, I think Inter Miami are standing there with their hands wide open, ready to embrace Lionel Messi and his family.
Yeah, I mean, if it goes without saying, if you're Miami right now, you are busting ass to try to build some sort of roster and give him some sort of, hey, this plus you equals supporter shield, equals MLS Cup, because even though money's very important, we all know players, as they get a little long in the tooth, they do want to win, and they don't want to go in. They don't want to head into the locker room after each half downtrodden. They actually want it to be a good experience. Always good experience talking with you, Charlie Davies. We look forward to watching Morning Footy Tuesday on CBS Sports Golasso. Can't wait, buddy. We'll be right back on 98.5 The Sports Hub with
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This. You're listening to The Soccer Show on your home for the Revs, the Bruins, the Celtics, and the Patriots. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Basketball show on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Just checking to see if you goofs out there were paying attention. It's, of course, The Soccer Show. DJ Bean got Brad Feldman in the dang house. What's up, buddy?
I was ready to talk hoops.
I was just joking about all the basketball stuff, because there is soccer to get to, specifically the Revs coming off a frustrating 1-1 draw. We've talked ad nauseum about the call and the own goal coming back. I more want to talk about with you the fact that a 1-1 draw against NYCFC feels like a kick in the crotch. And I feel like a few months ago, we might not have known that that would feel
well,
so.
Well, how's this? The way the Revs were going, coming in,
yeah,
with a 4-1-0 record, hadn't conceded a goal at home, and NYC are down a little bit from where they were last year and certainly the year before. I still think it's a disappointing result,
mm-hmm,
even though based on the game flow, even with the goal that got chalked off, I think it was a fair result. The Revs didn't generate enough chances to really say we should have won that. You don't know what happens if that goal were allowed, and you can make the case that goal should have been allowed. I can see both sides of that. But the I think expectations have been, you know, sort of leveled back up to where they were, you know, 2 years ago, which is a good thing. But the Reds are going to have to play better. They can't look past this next game to, you know, Columbus and Cincinnati. Every game in this conference, in this league, is tough. There's just not enough difference between the sides week to week.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting. It'll get lost in all of the great verbiage he used, but part of Bruce Arena's lament was that cost us stealing 3 points. And he did say a couple times, like we would have stolen that game. So I'm frustrated that call got in the way of us stealing. Because
were the head coach, I would be speaking that way too. But you just don't know. The Revs could have gone up 1-0, dropped their guard, and lost 2-1. There's mm-hmm. no way to know how that game plays out if that's allowed. They did go in front. They didn't protect the lead. End of story.
Yeah. But Carlos Heel looking mighty great in his return, and he said, we talked to him Tuesday, and he didn't sound like he was saying, like, I'm definitely 100%, but
I don't think he looked his best. I still don't think,
really?
Despite that assist 2 weeks ago and a really nice goal against NYC, I haven't seen peak Carlos Heel yet this year for more than stretches of 10 minutes. There are games in the past where he has run the match whistle to whistle, wire to wire, where he is orchestrating, dropping in deep to pick stuff up. Guys are reading off of him, making runs. And, you know, like, think of the number of times so far this year, and it's been stop-start for him, where he puts up his hand sort of like, my bad, I should have placed that better. When he's on, you don't see him doing that. Like, he's mm-hmm. he's making the ball go where he wants. He's not rushed. And I think we're going to see it. I think he just needs to get all the rust off of him. It was a good return to the starting lineup for sure, but there are better things ahead.
Is it just that he's a bit of a thing? And I say that with all the respect in the world. Is it just that he's a small guy and he has a small frame that he does run into injuries?
I don't know. I think he's remarkably durable. I think with the workload that he takes on, it's inevitable. I think if you want to ask like why he didn't last in the Premier League, part of it was the coaching change. It was also a player like him would have done better with a better team where they had more of the ball and mm-hmm. they weren't asking him to play on the wing or press. You know, when he could be on the ball, he could be the guy. But I don't think he's getting injured. Like, I think it's just, you know, he's not that fragile. You know, he 3 years ago he had that long-term injury, but he's been on the field a lot for the most part.
Yeah, he and Bruce Arena, and again, granted, I've been a fan of the Revs forever, but I've only been, like, super fan of the Revs for the last few years. He and Bruce Arena have both just been godsends. Like, without Carlos Heel, who knows where they are right now? He is their engine, and yeah, when maybe he runs a little too hot or gets the injury and misses a week or two, it can be frustrating, but they're so good with him playing. I want to talk about Giacomo Vrioni.
You always want to talk about Giacomo
Vrioni. Yeah, and I feel it sounds annoying to keep bringing
it up. Fair shake.
Until they're playing him with regularity, that's going to be a question. And maybe it's that we in the media overvalue the designated player.
No, I think you got asked that question. Why is he not on the field more? Last year, the answer was simple.
Yeah.
He came in dinged up. You know, he had the patella tendon issue, and I don't think we saw the best of Giacomo. Then he missed that sitter. I think it was against Toronto, where he was in front of goal, and he should have put it away, and he didn't. Everything would have dovetailed, I believe, if that had gone in. Then he had a good preseason. We have not seen Vrioni up front with a second forward, which is how he thrives, how he likes to play. Other than the preseason, when he did, he scored two goals. He was good in the preseason. Then he had sort of an indifferent game starting lineup against Charlotte, but he was playing alone up top on the road. I just think everybody should keep in mind that whether it was Bruce or the media or the fans, people thought Adam Buxa was a bust, or at least sort of underperformed relative to expectations when he first came in. When he started getting the starting lineup regularly, banged in a couple goals, everything grew out of that. And I think I just would love to see Vrioni up there, probably with Bo as the best complementary forward, because I believe from what I've seen of Vrioni playing with Albania and in the Austrian league, that he's a true footballer, that he has good feet, good movement, and that somebody like Carlos Heel and he would develop a real simpatico. Right now, Altidore is coming off the bench before Vrioni. Josie has worked hard when he's come in. I have nothing against him playing, but, you know, Bobby Wood's done fine.
Yeah.
But you're paying Vrioni a lot of money, and you paid a lot of money for Vrioni, and I just don't think he's done poorly enough to warrant him being, like, the fourth forward. But that's my opinion.
And in the case of Altidore, it's a lower ceiling. Like, you know what Josie Altidore is going to be, and this more, if you start giving Vrioni regular run, you're talking about growing somebody into maybe the next Adam Buxa.
Right, but, you know, I think it's more tactical. I think the way Bruce is looking at it is, like, who's gonna, you know, if we're up by a goal, who's going to drop their shoulder and press and make it miserable for the opposing team's back four and get me to the 90th minute now, as opposed to how can I increase the value, you know, the transfer value of my squad, you know, and sell on value for Vrioni. Like, you're not thinking that in the middle of the second half when you're looking down at your available subs, which is why I'd like to see Vrioni start. You know, like, not like Bobby Wood, he's a very honest player, but, you know, yeah, bigger upside for Vrioni than Wood and Altidore, who are in different places in their career. But, you know, I guess all I would say is this. I'm surprised that, you know, I love Bruce giving runouts to the teenagers.
Right, I was going to
bring that up. So why wouldn't you give runout a little bit more runway for Vrioni. But I'm sure if Bruce would get very annoyed, he would tell me to put that thought out of my head.
Yeah.
But he won't be able to do that with me because I'm still thinking about like you are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I'm not diagnosing you, but I have ADHD, so I have the superpower. You know what that is? Like where your attention isn't great in certain things, but when you do lock into something,
you go into the zone. Yeah,
you right. Like yeah. You can like I can pay music better attention than someone who doesn't really care about
it. Sounds like indirectly you're diagnosing me with ADHD, but that may be just my perception.
It's a call. I mean, if I am,
no, I actually took a test once and I'm not, but it surprised me. I thought I was.
Yeah, but so like my ADHD superpower is that when I'm like, hey, why isn't Vrioni out there? Unfortunately, I can't get the thought out of my
head. So we'll talk about it again next week.
I cannot wait. Brad Feldman, always a pleasure. We'll hear you on the call against Montreal, which should be an easy one. And on Apple TV, you can switch around.
That's the move. Yeah. You know, hit the center button, go up audio bubble, Charlie and me.
Yeah, man, nothing better. All right, Brad Feldman. With DJ Bean on 98.5 The Sports Hub, we'll be back with Brad Knighton, former Revs goalkeeper.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos. Bob.
The Soccer Show on your home for Boston sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Soccer Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub, DJ Bean, joined by former Revs goalkeeper and current Revolution Academy coach Brad Knighton in his first year as a coach. What's up, Brad?
How's it going?
How much has the young soccer player changed since? I don't want to say like since you were young because it makes it sound like I'm calling you old, but you know what I'm saying? Like in a pretty like short time, it seems like maybe the last 15, 20 years, just with coaching, nutrition, everything in sports, and especially guys in that like 10 to 20 range, it's so much more intense and just so much more evolved and smarter than it was back in the day.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, when I was a kid growing up, you know, you kind of just showed up to the field and played the games and went over some tactics. And, you know, we were around good players growing up. But, you know, what these MLS Academy teams have done within the last 10 to 15 years, like you talked about, is incredible. To see as many players coming through each individual academy, not just ours, and featuring for their first team. But it's a testament to the owners putting in the money to find product for their own teams in the local area and identifying these players and then, you know, developing these players. And like you said, it's from everything from a nutritional side, from a tactical side, a mental side. You know, these kids are having to adapt and, you know, figure out what it is to be a professional and if you want to make it in the professional game. And, you know, the weekly grind is definitely real and these kids are all in for it. So it's been great to see. The talent is incredible here. You know, you've got teams from all over the world down here with, you know, Arsenal and Manchester United and Chelsea's here. Real Madrid is here. I mean, there's teams from all over the world here that are featuring in this tournament, and the quality of play on the field is absolutely incredible to see. And it's nice to see that the next up and coming products around the world are featured here at this tournament.
And I'm imagining the kids that you're working with see the promise that this sort of thing holds, because you look at the Revs roster right now, and whether it's Noel Buck or Penny Otu, Barak Terevic, like these, there is the opportunity that at a young age you can make the next step and actually get some actual run.
Yeah, it's great. You know, the pathway is huge here. You know, we're developing these kids at a young age to hopefully, you know, transfer to within our second team, and then after that transfer within our first team, or if they're, you know, have good enough quality to jump directly to our first team. And it's awesome. And, you know, we're going through on a weekly basis, you know, breaking down game film just as we would with the first team, you know, showing these kids clips and tendencies of teams and players and, you know, it's just really nice to see when you can sit there and clip, you know, game footage from, you know, the first team, and these guys that have already come through our academy are featuring in and showing, you know, what we want to see from them. And we're actually showing actual academy kids doing it. So it's great that they can relay, you know, that information to a player that was just in our program not so long ago.
You have coaching experience before this even. When you were playing, you coached at Wheaton College. Did you always know that you wanted to be a coach? I mean, it seemed in like the final years of your career is when I really started to follow the Revs closely, and you did seem like the sort of like leader slash mentor type.
Yeah, no, I've always had a knack for getting into coaching. I enjoy it. I enjoy the process. It's nice when you can kind of take a step back, especially at our position, you know, and kind of step back and analyze and see things from kind of a different lens. Obviously, the coaching lens is a little bit different than the player lens, and it's always great to do some reflection in that regard. So, I mean, even when I was finishing, you know, my last couple of years, I was writing down every session that we did on pen and paper and stuff that we did during the week, and things that happened on the weekend within the game and the game plan that we employed. And then some stuff that I probably would have done differently, or stuff that I liked, or stuff I want to take away. And, you know, I'm constantly going back and forth and scanning notes and seeing, you know, if I want to implement a session with one of these younger groups, and, you know, how can I do that with the amount of knowledge that I've had, whether it be from Wheaton College or from the academy or from the first team, and some of the sessions that we've had through the years with, you know, Jay Heaps or Brad Friedel or Bruce or all these guys that have come in here, you know, being able to take what they've given us the last several years as me being a pro and kind of relay it to these younger kids as well.
Are you a Ted Lasso guy?
Yeah.
So how similar is it coaching?
It's like that, but a little bit more time consuming.
Okay, so I was going to say, if you had said no and outright dismissed it, I was going to be like, oh, you're such a Roy Kent. But I actually think that as far as the AFC Richmond coaches go, you probably are more in line with the Roy Kent, where like you're the player that has the experience, but also does seem to have an appreciation for the actual coaching element of it. Like you're not just there to be like, hey, I played, this is what it is. I think that you seem pretty collaborative, yeah?
Absolutely. I feel like there's a piece of me in each individual character, which is kind of awesome, because there's stuff that I like about every single character on the show, and it's like being able, if you could literally take a piece from everybody and add that, that's, I feel like that's kind of like myself.
You obviously spent a lot of time with Kevin Hitchcock. Can you speak to the impact? I'm talking about the Revs goalkeeping coach who played in the Premier League and obviously had a big role in the development of Matt Turner and George A. Petrovic. Can you speak to like the, I don't want to say genius because it does sound like I'm hyping him up too much, but I'm not crazy in thinking there's something special with this guy.
I mean, you hit the nail on the head here. I mean, not many people know about this guy, but when you mention, you know, the goalkeeping core, you mentioned the coaching staff, this is the guy behind the scenes doing all the dirty work, and he gets kind of not really any credit for any of it. I mean, the guy goes above and beyond any way he can, and that's just how he is as a person. You know, he's not doing it just because it's his job. It's because he loves the game. He loves interacting with players. He loves developing players. He wants to make players better day in and day out, and he comes from a professional environment. You know, he's done it for the last 40 years, whether it be a player or a coach, and I mean, the guy is something special. He's the best I've ever been around. He's great at what he does. He knows how to get the most out of every single player that's around him. And he makes practice and training and everything fun. And so it's that environment that you want to be in, and he empowers you. And so when you add a combination of all that together, there's no reason where Matt is where he is. There's no reason why Georgie's doing what he's doing. And the whole goalkeeping core, you know, from when I was there to where they are now or where they're at. It's just because that's the way Kevin rolls, and that's how he wants it to be, and it's always going to be that way, and he's by far the best in the business in MLS.
I feel like at this point, it's just proven. You give this guy good players, and he is going to make them great. Like for as long as I've been watching the Revs, whether Matt was back there, whether you were back there, whether it was George Petrovic, like, the last thing I'm ever worried about is goalkeeping, and I think that obviously credit to you guys for being very good players, but so much of it is the coaching, and hopefully one day soon we'll be talking about the Brad Knighton effect as we talk about great players coming through, because I'm sure your coaching career is going to hold a lot of great things. Brad Knighton, thank you very, very much for joining us. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having me on.
All right, that'll do it for the Soccer Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Revs, Montreal tonight. We'll talk to you next week.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.